Hey everyone, and welcome to another video podcast, one of our series of interviews with our sailing friends and cruising friends. And today we are interviewing Dan and Kika from Sailing Uma. I'm sure many of you already follow their channel already. If you don't, there is a link to their channel in the description below. So for those of you who don't follow Sailing Uma, guys, just introduce yourself and let everyone know kind of where you are, what you're doing, a bit of your background, and we'll go from there.
So I'm Kika.
I'm Dan.
And we are living on our 36-foot sailboat, which is a Pearson 36 from 1972. And 5 years ago, we moved onto the boat and we refitted the entire boat from keel up. And then we converted her to electric. And now we are sailing. We just crossed the Atlantic last fall.
Yeah.
And now we are currently in Amsterdam just waiting to start sailing the Med.
Well, start sailing north.
Yeah, that's
awesome.
True.
We still have tentative plans to make it up into Norway and Iceland this summer.
Yeah.
And then down into the Med. Yeah.
Okay, wow.
Oh, yeah,
that's so fun. That's amazing. And okay, so obviously this interview is going to focus a lot on your electric engine because that is quite unique. And I feel like electric cars are really becoming very popular. Like every second person who's buying a new car is buying an electric car, which is amazing. But that hasn't really happened yet with sailboats. So I think that this is still quite new to a lot of people who are interested in sailing, the concept of electric engines, but we are getting a lot of questions about that because, of course, we're going to be building a new catamaran next year. And a lot of people are asking us whether that's something that we're going to consider. So I really want to pick your brains about that.
Yeah, it's pretty, listen, from our point of view, this will probably go on for far long. We'll have to edit it down because I'll be banging on and asking all sorts of random questions. And I am going to ask like the basics, as we have a lot of people that watch these podcasts that are just getting into sailing. So apologies if some of it is like, you know, oh, for God's sakes, Nick, stop.
No, not at all.
So I'm going to start by asking you, I mean, obviously Pearson 72 came at some point with a diesel engine.
Yes.
36.
36. So your original boat, yeah. So
yeah,
it had a diesel engine.
I wish you had a Pearson 72. Anyway. yes, I think
that was in the year.
I think from
factory,
they came with atomic 24s or 28s or something, those little gas ones. And then at some point it was upgraded to a Westerbeek 33, which, as we found out later, they only made for about a year and they only made a couple, maybe 100 of them or something. They're not very popular engines, so they're very hard to find parts for. But one of the reasons we got such a good deal on our boat is because after we put in our initial offer, they found out that the motor had seized from improperly winterizing it up in Boston. And so we put in an incredibly, incredibly low offer, almost as a joke, and they accepted it. So then we ended up with a sailboat with no diesel motor, and we had to take a few months off to go down to Haiti and work. But in those time, we kind of came up with the electric ideas as sort of like a solution to a problem we weren't really expecting to have.
Yeah, I mean, the reason why we went electric isn't really because we wanted to be green or because we wanted to save the planet. Because if you think about it, anyone that lives on a sailboat is already doing so much for the environment than if they live in an apartment in a city, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when we went to Haiti and we realized that... So the thing with Haiti, I grew up saving up a lot of candlesticks because you can't rely on the power grid there. I think we had more blackout days than days with power.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. So most houses there, they have a self-sufficient system where they have solar panels, and some of them, most of them has generator. So they don't depend on anybody else to get their power. And so after the project, we started thinking about, or we started shifting our mind from, okay, how do we fix that old diesel engine that we can't really do anything about because we didn't know anything about diesels.
No, and we spent like the first month when we had the boat, calling Westerbeek and calling all the diesel mechanics and being like, is this thing even possible? Because we had bought a refurbished one that we thought was the same, and we were just going to like swap some parts over because it was set up as a generator.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, after about a month, they were all the same. They were like, you could be 5 or 6,000 into a rebuild with some diesel mechanic and find out that, you know, he dropped a spring down the drain or like, we don't make that part anymore or something. And then you just have a paperweight. So, you know, you may as well spend your money on a new motor. But we didn't have $6,000. So
They were not cheap.
No.
So, so we started shifting our brains from, okay, we can't fix this motor, to how can we get our boat to be 100% self-sufficient? And then we started looking at solar panels. And then from that, eventually, it led to looking into electric motors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because every, like Higa said, every house in Haiti has solar panels and a bunch of batteries in the backyard and inverters, and so they can keep their refrigerators and their lights on when the power goes out. And to us coming from, or to me coming from Canada and the United States, off-grid houses were always this, like, pipe dream, like, and in architecture school, like, you can build these, like, you know, carbon-neutral buildings, and it was always, like, this big sort of thing. And then we're like, what do you mean every house has solar panels and batteries? Like, this is straightforward. And then we're like, you know, golf carts have batteries and electric motor, and if we have solar panels, batteries, and electric motor, we could probably get our boat in and out of the slip and on and off anchor, and then it's a sailboat, so we can take it from there. From the beginning, we were never trying to replace the diesel motor. We were trying not to have to, like, row our boat in and out of its slip. You know, a 36-foot boat is just a little bit too big to have a sculling oar off the back.
I've got a mate that will do that, actually.
Yeah. And we read books about people sailing around the world without motors, and they would either scull in or, like, use their dinghy and tow in or something like that. And we were like, okay, so if that's the only time that they needed a motor, how can we get something that can do that rather than needing to, like, motor across an ocean or something like that?
So the original engine, your first electric engine, where did you source it and what was the research process? So tell us about the original electric engine.
So our electric engine, the first one that we had, the original one, was a forklift motor from eBay.
Mm-hmm.
Because we started looking at, so when we had the idea of the electric motor, it's not like the system didn't exist. There's a bunch of companies out there that had already a system placed for sailboats, but they were ridiculously pricey. And way beyond our price range that we ever thought that we could ever have. So we were like, okay, well, boats are not the only thing that has electric motors. And there's forklifts, there's cars. And we initially wanted to get an electric car, what's the name of the Chevy?
The Nissan Leaf, I think, was the only one that had serviceable aftermarket battery packs in it. A lot of the other ones were, like, very proprietary and very built in. Or maybe it was a Chevy Bolt. The Nissan Leaf and the Chevy Bolt both had, like, packs you could break down and rebuild. And then I've read about the Leaf, just got golf carts because golf carts had electric motors and electric boats. And they're not 300 volts and they're not, you know, taking apart an entire car. And the used electric car market's actually very, very small.
But also because when we were looking at the Chevy Bolt initially, we thought that, okay, let's find a scrapped one, get the motor out of it, and kind of wiggle our way into making it work for a boat.
Mm-hmm.
But finding a scrapped one was almost impossible.
Yeah.
Because it was such a new technology that, I mean, electric motors worked so well that was scrapping them at the time.
Yeah, or if people did find them, they were, like, yards were having a hard time dealing with the battery banks because they're 700 volt DC and, like, that's lethal. But when they did have one, they were just disappearing because, like, the DIY electric market is so small, but they're very feisty. They're very fierce when they find stuff like that. They pick it up really quick. But yeah, we've been asked.
So your plan was to buy a whole system. So, like, to buy the batteries, the chargers, the kind of converters and the motor from a repurposed car.
But probably more from a golf cart, because we very soon found out that golf carts are 48 volts. 48 volts is a lot easier. You can get solar chargers at 48 and you can get inverters and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Like, most off-grid houses are based on 48 volts. So we started very quickly looking into things like golf carts or pallet trucks or forklifts.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was just a matter of finding a motor. Because we know you could find batteries. 12-volt batteries are very common and they're everywhere. And finding a motor, we just started looking on eBay and started cruising around to find out what was available. And new ones are... A new golf cart motor is probably in the $1,000 to $2,000 range, which we also didn't have at the time. So... We ended up finding this forklift motor on the very used forklift motor on eBay for $100. And it was big enough that we figured it would spin our prop. It wasn't big enough to push us to hull speed really, like, continuously. But it was $100. And so we bought it and then we got the thing and it took us pretty much 9 months to figure out how to get it to spin.
Can I just ask, I mean, your Pearson is obviously shaft drive, or it was shaft drive back in the time. How did you manage to get the shaft alignment with the motor? I mean, that is always, you know, we always read about and from first-hand experience, you know, getting that alignment, even when it's almost, you're Canadian, so, but I'm just trying to work out the metrics, whether it's through metric or imperial, but literally within a couple of millimeters, otherwise you end up with P-bracket problems. I mean, how do you align that? Did you get an engineer to do it, or did you do it yourselves?
No, we do everything ourselves. but it's tricky when you have a big 400-pound diesel motor to get it aligned. Because because there's not much flexibility between the two. With a 100-pound electric motor, we built our own chain, sprocket coupler, I guess you'd call it, because the flexible mounts are also very expensive, $400 to $1,000 to get a flexible coupler.
Yep.
And we built ours for like $40 out of Tractor Parts. But it allowed for some vibration and some movement. And this is after like three or four iterations of trial and error with chains and belts and reduction plates and everything else.
Yeah, I was going to say, but, because it's not like we figured out something and did it. We've tried multiple different ways, multiple different designs until we find something that would work.
It was it was an evolution for sure. But yeah, what we ended up doing was actually, because the motor's not that heavy, we actually ended up attaching it to the prop shaft and then aligning the whole thing as one unit rather than trying to align them two separately. Because the prop shaft does have a decent amount of wiggle in it. And the issues come when the face of the prop shaft sprocket and the face of the transmission sprocket aren't aligned. So we just made sure those were aligned together and then just sort of built the motor up from there. So it worked out pretty well.
So you don't need a kind of clunky transmission or a gearbox with an electric motor, do you? It's just literally it's polarity reversal and then application of power.
And we kept our original transmission to begin with because it made the mounting process really easy because we could keep the throttle and we could keep forward and reverse mechanically because our whole initial setup was that $100 motor and then pretty much everything else we got for free out of scrapped boats or like used golf cart parts that people had. And so we had a controller for the motor, but it wasn't designed for that type of motor. So we had to wire it sort of onto its test circuit. So it only had one direction. And then we had to, it was a very messy setup, but then we had to use the transmission for forward and reverse. And then eventually we were able to upgrade to the proper controller for that motor, which is like either about $800 or $1,000 or something. So it took us a while to save up for that. And then we had electronic forward and reverse. Yeah. Cause you just flick a switch and it goes from forward to reverse.
So at this point you've got a 48 volt electric motor, driving the boat. But obviously you need to find a power supply. I'm making the assumption that you took 12 volt batteries and ran them in series and parallel to bring it up to 48 and then increase the size of the bank.
We had at the beginning we had four batteries.
We could only afford four, really cheap, not even deep cycle lead acid batteries from like Walmart.
Mm-hmm. We had that for the first 2 years, but the problem is the batteries, they would just die every 6 months. We had to replace them. They were just not reliable.
Lead acid really isn't designed to handle the loads from electric motors, especially if you can't fully charge them back up after. Because we live on solar alone. For the last 5 years, we've only lived on solar, our solar panels. And so not being able to bring them up to 100% every day meant that every day they weren't at 100%, they were slowly dying. And I don't think we ever had our batteries charged to 100%. Yeah. So yeah, about every 6 months we had to replace those until we could save up and get lithium, which is much better.
So with your first engine or your first motor, you're going, what was the current draw? I mean, obviously the current draw will increase depending on the load on the motor and the revs that you're going at, but you know, give us some examples of current draw that you expect to say, you know, cruising along at
current draw is parabolic based on your boat speed, which is something that when you have a diesel, you don't really notice because diesels hardly ever run at their peak efficiency or peak horsepower and never at the same time. And so you just know that, you know, at 5 knots, you're drawing this much fuel and at 3 knots, you're probably drawing the same fuel, but at 8 knots, it maybe goes up 30% or something. With an electric motor, it's very parabolic. This is probably a good time to plug the fact that our whole initial setup, we have a pretty in-depth write-up on our website, so sailinguma.com/electrobeak. And that was our sort of initial setup, and we went through all the parts and all of the curves and all of the numbers there. But yeah, at 3 knots, we're usually around 1 to 1.5 kilowatts of current. And that's sort of our sweet spot, around 3.5 knots. And we can motor pretty much all day. We can motor for 40 miles or so. Mm-hmm. At that speed.
Yeah, but the issue with our previous motor, well, for one, the batteries that we had before, the lithium ion, we wouldn't be able to test it that much anyway. Yeah. So, and then the second problem is that it would just overheat. As after 10 minutes of motoring, the motor would just start overheating. So we would never be able to accurately get those numbers. And then when we switched to lithium ion, then we were able to I think the first time we tested that much range was in Fort Lauderdale. Okay.
Yeah, we motored for 14 miles yeah. or something once and, we went to lithium. But yeah, the mm-hmm. motor gets really, our old motor would get really, really hot. And so it would start to lose efficiency dramatically because it was way undersized for what we needed. And it was a 36-volt motor that we're pushing 48 volts through. So we were milking it for all it was worth. But it was an industrial forklift motor, so it could handle it. But it wasn't very efficient.
No. And at the time, I mean, it didn't really bother us because we weren't trying to push it to motor it for hours on end, because we would only use it to get into a slip or get into a marina or the last, like, 5 minutes of getting into an anchorage. So we never really mm-hmm. minded it. But the reason why we switched from that original motor to the new motor is because we were trying to get regen, which is like recharging yeah. our batteries while we're sailing. It's something that our motor just couldn't do.
Yeah, and there was, I think, about 4 reasons why we ended up switching. Because any individual problem we had with our old motor, we could have solved on an individual basis, right? Mm-hmm. Like it overheated, and we could have figured out a way to liquid cool it. We weren't able to get regen from it because of the way it was a CPEX motor, so it had 2 electromagnets. And so you had to it took power to make power, if that makes sense. And the power we were getting in was less than the power that it was using to make that electromagnetic field. And so that was the second problem. But we could have put a belt and an alternator off to the side and got some power from sort of setting up a hydro generator. And then we had the fixed blade prop, which would constantly be dragging through the water while we were sailing. So it was slowing us down and it was spinning the motor. So it was creating noise. And since we weren't getting any power from it, it was just kind of annoying. So we would end up putting vice grips on the shaft and locking it off while we were sailing, just because it just went rrr, 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 yeah. rrr, 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 like all the time. If we were making power, we would be fine. We're like, yeah, we're making electricity. Like, who cares what it sounds like? But because of those problems, any individual one wouldn't have been an issue, but because we had all of them, we were looking to upgrade to a motor that could solve those problems anyway. And the new motor definitely solved all of them. So it's quite nice.
So just before we move on to the new motor, so you started with 4, I'm assuming 100 amp hour batteries from Walmart, and then you moved up to a lithium bank.
Yeah, group 27D. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
If it's not from Walmart, it's from Napa or something
They were about $89 US each, if that tells you what kind of quality we're looking at here.
Yeah, they're not the same as the ones we're getting rid of.
Yeah.
So then you obviously, you upgraded to, I'm assuming, a bigger lithium bank.
Yeah, we have...
Did you still have...
No, we have lithium now, and the batteries that we got were actually direct drop-in replacement size and amp hour to those. They're group 27 sized batteries, if that makes sense. So they're 100 amp hour, but they're lithium. Okay. And now we have 12 of them. And we could talk for hours about why lithium is so much better. But it's not just about numbers. It's about it's like a C rating, I think they call it, where how much current you can actually take out at a time. Because lead acid's rated for a 20 hour discharge of 1 amp or something like that. Whereas lithium, if you have a 100 amp hour battery, you could take that out in a minute and then charge it back up again if you wanted to, and it would be fine. So it effectively, we went from 4 batteries to 12 batteries, and it gave us about 20 times more usable power. So it completely validates the cost of lithium, especially when you look at the life cycle. Yeah. We're not going to have to replace these batteries for 30 years, whereas we were replacing our old batteries every 6 months. Mm-hmm. It's a painful upfront cost, but it completely is way cheaper in the long run.
No, we're definitely going lithium with Ruby Rose 2. So, it's something we've already kind of worked out, and, those details will be released. Can I just ask, so the battery bank that you've got, 12 lithiums, are you using that for domestic battery power as well, or is it just a separate standalone battery bank solely for the motor?
No, a battery bank is for everything.
Yeah.
We use it for our house bank and our motor, and everything is connected to it.
So your house bank
We have... Again, because it's 48 volts, finding inverters that run from 48 that go up to 120 or 230, and then DC converters that go down to 12 volts or 24 volts, and solar chargers that come in at 48. It's all relatively easy stuff to find. And companies like Victron and probably Mastervolt and some of those make very good, comprehensive suites of chargers and inverters that all network together and they all talk to each other. And it makes the whole thing really simple. So, but we just have the one bank wired at 48 volts and everything comes off of that.
Now, moving on to the new engine. Obviously, we've seen your videos about that, and it looks a pretty convoluted process. I mean, I don't consider myself to be a Luddite when it comes to technology, but it's fairly involved. So, tell us about the new engine. what your choices were and how you arrived at putting that engine in.
Well, yeah, how many days do you have?
That's a whole other topic.
In 30 seconds or less.
No, it's take your time. Yeah, that's
so,
what this whole interview
like
is about.
We said before, like we were already planning to upgrade our electric motor this winter to something that solved all those problems, right? It was liquid cooled, so it would run more efficiently, something we could put a folding prop or a feathering prop on so that while we were sailing, which is like 99.9% of the time, we weren't dragging a propeller through the water. We weren't set on a sail drive versus shaft drive because there's good options for both. And since we already had a shaft drive, we were actually looking into switching out to and building our own system with the shaft drive. But in the back of our minds, ever since we got a boat and ever since we started thinking about electric motors, we've known that OceanVolt's sort of been like the top company in the market, but at a price point that no mere mortal can like ever afford. It's like buy a Tesla or buy an OceanVolt.
Yeah.
So it's always been on like this back burner of like, you know, someday when we're rich and famous or win the lottery and, you know, maybe in our next boat that we build or something, we can put an OceanVolt in it. But we never really thought we'd ever have one. And so while we were sort of discussing our electric motor plans for the winter on a Patreon live chat or something like that. One of our followers who has electric motors in his catamaran was like, I've got four and I'm taking two of them out and replacing them with small diesel, so I have the best of both worlds. Do you want one? And we're like,
of course.
Yes. Because it was already like on our bucket list of the motor we wanted someday. And so there are pros and cons between shaft drive and sail drive, but you know, it worked out well. We didn't mind putting in the effort to install a sail drive for all the benefits we were getting from it. And going from a shaft drive to a sail drive is a lot easier than going from a sail drive to a shaft drive, if that makes sense. It's just a little bit of fiberglass work. And yeah, and like we said earlier, there's no like alignment issues. Like as long as you get it to within 2 or 3 degrees of parallel and perpendicular, you're fine. So it actually wasn't that difficult to install. And it came with the same controller that our old motor had, so we could program it and everything like that. So it only took us maybe 4 or 5 days to install it. It wasn't bad, and it solved sort of all of our issues.
Cool. So you wedged a potato in the stern tube, and
oh,
you're
shit.
Off.
Sorry.
Sorry.
You had to say that joke again.
Saved by the bell. So basically, you've gone. You decided to install the sail drive because it was someone's providing it for you.
Are
they OceanVolt models?
Yeah, it's an OceanVolt. Now, OceanVolt sort of makes two sail drives. One is their sort of original sail drive, their standard one with a Gori propeller. So it's a folding propeller that flips in reverse. And they've come up with a new one that I think they call their servoprop. It's kind of based off of like a maxi prop theory where like the prop actually feathers. And that one's even more efficient and has even better regen. But again, because this one was given to us, it makes all the sense in the world to go with that.
Absolutely.
So it works really, really well. And the whole system is very sleek and modern, and it's all networked. And so it all talks to itself. Like the whole experience of using it is actually really, really smooth as well. Which is another reason why we like it. It's clean and simple.
Yep.
So tell us about the regen. So you've obviously got regen capacity through the turning of the shaft while you are, the propeller, not the shaft anymore, as you're going along. So regenerative capacity from that is obviously, throw some figures at us for the speed that you're doing.
So we haven't been able to test it much because we've been waiting to get a few cables and wires and stuff that we were missing to make it all networked together between the throttle and the screen. And it also is, it connects into our entire Victron system, so it can sense like what the battery level is and compare that with how much range, like at what speed you're motoring and how far your range is and everything. So we're a bit hesitant to like put out specific numbers about the whole thing yet because we haven't fully tested everything and gotten specifics. But on our recent sail, with just sort of making regen work by feathering the throttle in forward and reverse and kind of like looking at how much power we're consuming versus how much power we're using, we were able to tell that we were getting regen. But because of, you know, we were having varying loads between the fridge and the freezer turning on and sun coming in through the solar panels, it was hard to get a specific number. But it was probably it looked to be, after we were sailing above 5 knots, we were starting to get usable power, maybe 50 to 60 watts. And then once we got up to like 6, 6.5, 7 knots, that was probably around 100 to 150 watts. But now that we have the screen, and the Ocean Vault screen has some proprietary programming in it that senses how fast you're going and how much power is being generated, and speeds up and slows down the throttle input to match the prop speed to like give you the most efficient regen possible, if that makes sense. And the servo prop one is even more efficient because it can actually, it's about, from what they say, it's like 30 to 40% more efficient. So it's not an insane amount of power. A lot of people are like, oh, regen never works, it's not enough power to do anything. But our boat only uses about 100 to 150 watts at any given moment. So if that's all we're getting offshore sailing at 6.5 knots, then we'll never have like a power deficit. And then our solar or wind or anything will just be adding to the battery bank as we sail. Like when we sailed overnight recently, we were playing with the regen all night and we didn't actually lose any power overnight. We were at like 73% when we started and we're at 73% the next morning. So we weren't actually consuming any power because we were generating about what we were making.
Okay. So, and that's the fridges and the nav lights and nav equipment. So.
Yeah, that's radar and AIS, like the whole boat, chart plotter, everything.
That's actually awesome.
That included autopilot too, because we didn't have the wind bay in the water. So that included running our autopilot.
Yeah, so that's going to be, what, 10, 12 amps minimum? That's what we'd run out, I think.
Yeah, so the tricky part, most people are used to talking about amps because everyone has a 12-volt system. We've switched to talking about watts because if we talk about amps, it sounds like we're on a miracle boat, right? We're like, oh, our whole boat only draws 2 amps. Be like, 2 amps, my lights draw 2 amps. But it's 4 times more because we have a 48-volt system. But the real benefit, I think, and we've joked and talked about, you know, sort of like the ideal electric boat, and it would be a high-performance catamaran with lots of space for solar, 2 wind generators on the back, because once you break that sort of 9-10 knot speed threshold, you're talking about like a kilowatt of power coming in at both motors. So that's like running a small generator offshore. I know...
That's insane.
Yeah.
Watch this space.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Yeah.
Why did you say that? So,
it's that's always been kind of the joke. And the guy who had the four motors on his boat was saying, and he has a big like 60-something foot catamaran, and he was saying like there's been days offshore where he's been sailing and like they have everything on their boat running and they still can't use all the power they're generating. You know, they're running the air conditioners offshore. You know, it's crazy. So,
yeah.
It's okay on a boat as slow as ours, and it gets by. But just like the amount of power it takes to the amount of power it takes to motor goes up parabolically with speed, the amount of power you're generating also goes up parabolically with speed. So around 5.5, 6 knots you start, and by 10 it's ridiculous.
Yeah, we have the same thing. We have a 1C hydro generator, and we've got exactly the same thing. When we get to about, it's a 300 watt motor on a 12 volt system. But yeah, once we get to 7 knots, it's powering the boat, and then, you know, we can make ice cream.
Yeah,
and
the problem is that we don't get to that speed very often. So we
the amount of stuff you've got on the boat.
We don't. So we can't.
We've actually noticed with the folding propellant stuff. When we had the sort of copper coat and back at the beginning and we were dragging our old 3-ray prop through the water, our average speed was like 5.5 knots. And then we switched to ablative paint, so our hull became a lot more slippery and we got new sails. And then our average speed was like 6.5 knots. And then we switched to a folding prop and a sail drive, and our average speed is now like 7, 7.25, 7.5. So it's like
it makes a difference.
An average of 6.5 knots for us is quite comfortable now. But yeah, it's the same thing with a watt and C. People ask us all the time, like, why wouldn't we just get a watt and C? And it's like, well, because we already have an electric motor. Like, we don't need a second thing dragging off the back. And for us, the price of the watt and C, we were going to upgrade our electric motor for that price anyway. So we were like, if we had a diesel, it makes sense, but we already have an electric motor, so we don't need, like, another one.
Yeah, someone has to figure out a way to make that work to get our power.
Exactly.
So with your current setup, like banks fully charged and no regeneration, what is your range? Because this is a question that we always get about electric motors, like, oh, well, you know, what is the motoring range? And I know that that's, you know, a ballpark figure because it's sea state and load on the boat.
It's not even a ballpark.
It's such a hard thing to answer, really, because it depends how fast you're motoring. It depends, sea state, the
people
wind.
People want a number, but it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you want to try to answer that?
That is, like, electric motors in the last year or two, especially because batteries are getting cheaper, have become in every single way better than diesels, except range, right? Because we can't just keep dumping more diesel fuel into it and just buying more jerry cans and putting them on deck and just keep motoring. And especially with a diesel motor, I mean, you guys know, your cruising speed's what, five and a half knots with your diesel, like 2200 RPM or something like that. Like you can go faster, but it starts to like scream and whine.
I can
And that's sort of the sweet spot. But with electric, it's such a parabolic curve, and it depends so heavily on like current and wind. Like if we have more than 5 knots of apparent wind speed, we're sailing anyway. And five knots of wind, we can sail at 3 knots, and that's not even with a code zero.
Mm.
So we only ever motor in dead calm conditions when there's like 0 to 3 knots of wind, which is so rare that it just doesn't happen.
Yeah,
right?
Because if it happens, we choose not to get out there usually. Yeah.
And so when we are motoring, it's like the sails are down and we're motoring, you know, 10 boat lengths into a marina. Like it takes less power than making tea in the morning on an electric kettle. Like it doesn't even drain the battery bank. The motor's on for 5 minutes. But to give some range estimation, because we have been contemplating going through canals here in Europe, and so we do need some sort of numbers. With our new motor, at about 1 kilowatt, we're going at 3 knots, which is canal speed. And assuming that there's no headwind, and there's no wind at all, at 3 knots at 1 kilowatt, we can motor for 14 hours. So that's 40 nautical miles or so.
Mm-hmm. Without a current.
Yeah, exactly. And if there's a tailwind, like it even goes down even more, right? So if there's 4 or 5 knots of wind coming from behind us, we can be motoring at like 500 watts and go the same speed. I like how we talk about tailwinds like we're in an airplane. There's a crosswind.
Okay, well, let me just put it another way to you then. Would you say, it, now that you've got experience of these two engines and also diesel engines, that electric engines in boats are no longer just to get you in and out of marinas, that you can actually do shorter passages with them rather than just getting you into harbour once you put the sails down?
I think... I mean, it depends on the battery bank, right? And the batteries are the most expensive part at this point. You can buy a motor and you can buy a controller for $3,000. And for another $1,000 of machine shop fees, you can put one in your boat. Like, it's not terribly expensive. And so batteries are always the expense. But if you're okay with motoring at 3 or 4 knots, then you can get, you know, 4 lithium batteries and a Honda generator. And as long as you put gas in it, you can keep going.
Yep.
And so we have a relatively large lithium bank for a boat this size, and we can motor for 40 miles because we've always been sort of planning to be able to motor all day in a canal, pull over, either have a generator and charge up or plug into a marina and charge up overnight and then keep going the next day. But it makes sense on a sailboat because you have sails, and if you have a good suite of sails or a boat that sails well, you can always sail until you're just kind of right there at that last little bit to get into the marina or to get into a bay or something like that. So we've tried testing our motor and doing range tests, but we just haven't ever had more than a few hours of no wind. And so anytime the wind fills up, it just feels like it's against our moral code to like not roll out the head sail and start sailing again. I think, what is it? And we've been at this for 5 years. How many times have we been becalmed in 5 years? And we've sailed almost 20,000 miles.
Less than a handful.
I think the longest we've ever been becalmed was like 4 hours off the coast of Miami.
And when that happens, I mean, we choose to wait it out because usually when we get becalmed on a passage, it's because we know the wind's shifting. And if the wind is shifting, we get becalmed and we know that in 2-3 hours it's going to come back in the right direction.
And
so we wait.
And it's a slow taper down to zero wind, and then it's usually a slow taper back up. Mm-hmm. And so the sea is dead calm. It's like being on anchor. When we're offshore and it's becalmed like that, we're like, oh, sweet, let's go to bed. Like, let's eat, let's clean the boat, let's take a shower, let's fix something. What's much more common is that after a line squall blows through, the sea state's still disgustingly sloppy and there's zero wind for like 30 minutes, in which case it's perfect. You click on the motor, it's already on, it's quiet. You keep the bow in the right direction at 3-4 knots for 20-30 minutes until the wind fills back in, and then you keep going. And that's what we've used it for a lot more than actually, you know, becalm. The whole like getting becalmed in the doldrums at the equator thing just seems to be like poor weather planning to me.
But it's also why we chose to cross.
I've never been through the doldrums. So.
Well, we've been becalmed. We have, of course.
Yeah. Although you're right, it's usually like fairly unpleasant. It's not like glassy seas where it's just all like gorgeous and lovely, like in a massive anchorage. It's usually like sloppy, like horrible.
But that usually doesn't last for very long because usually it's just when a line squall blows through. And so we just keep our bow pointed, you know, downwind or something like that, and you know, so that's not too bad.
Yeah, but also in terms of our route planning, that's why we choose the routes that we choose, and that's why we cross the North Atlantic versus going to Bermuda and into the Azores, because we wanted more chances to always have wind than more chances of not having wind.
Yeah. And we always did. On our crossing, we didn't get becalmed in 18 days. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think our average speed across was like just over six knots, so, and it was all downwind, which is why we decided to cross that far up.
Yeah.
Yeah, we went down.
We went further south, and yeah, we had an average speed of 4.9 knots. It was like, it was rough.
Yeah.
Like, get me to Europe.
Yeah, there were some difficult days on board.
Well, and 4.5 isn't quite slow enough that you want a motor, but it's also not fast enough that you feel like you're getting anywhere either.
Yeah, exactly. It's that really horrible kind of middle ground. Yeah, that was not fun. Anyway.
So you've obviously got, so I've seen your solar array, you know, all nicely angled and on pulleys and, you know, very, so how many watts of solar are you putting in? Do you have on the arch?
Well, we have 240 each. Yeah. So that's 480 together.
Yeah.
480.
In Colombia, in the middle of the summer, we saw 520 watts coming in peak. Usually around 200 to 300, like on an average, and we're tipping it up. Even in the morning, we get around 200 to 300. So, this last month we were on anchor and we were averaging like probably 1.8 to 2.5 kilowatt hours a day. Kilowatt hours. I got a lot of crap about not putting the hours on last time. It's enough to keep our boat running.
Topped up.
It's enough to live on. And then when it's a little bit cloudy, we start burning into our battery bank. We haven't got a wind generator yet, just because we haven't really found a solution that works the way we want it to work.
Yeah.
And we kind of have a small boat, so.
We've looked at a couple different systems, just like the one that you hoist on the side of your mast, like the vertical ones. But I think the one that would work the most for us would be one that you can hoist in your...
The four triangle.
And then when you need it, you hoist it at anchor, and then when you don't need it, you don't have to permanently have it on the boat.
The problem is that ones that are small enough that you can leave them mounted permanently don't create anywhere near the kind of power that we would want in anything less than 25 or 30 knots of wind, which is just so rare that it doesn't really seem viable to plan it that way. I think the way we see using a wind generator is having something we can store that's massive. And when we hoist it, it's putting out like 400, 500, 600 watts in 15 to 20 knots of wind. And we hoist it for like a day or two during a storm, and our batteries are just topped right back up again. We pull it down and don't take it out for another month until we're getting low. So that's kind of how we see using a wind generator, or potentially having, you know, a dozen flat solar panels that we can either roll up or fold up, and then on a bright sunny day, zip it out and do the same thing like once or twice a month, just topping them up. Because up here in the north, we have been relying on marinas every
2 to 3 weeks
or so, going into a marina for the night, plugging in. It takes 8 hours to charge up our batteries because we have a small battery charger. And then we're back out on anchor the next day.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, super interesting. And just a random question to both of you. It's not random, but do you see this? What is the future of boating, of recreational boating, as the technology increases and the cost theoretically decreases? Do you see, I mean, you obviously you're early adopters, but do you see this becoming more mainstream?
Honestly, as much as it would be nice, I don't think so, because it would be nice for more sailors to be more aware of the power of the electric motor, so to speak, right? But I think mentally they're so, like, most sailors are embedded in their brain that a diesel is a safety factor, and that they can rely on a diesel engine more than they can rely on an electric motor
or their own
sailing
skills.
And for that reason, I think that electric motors are not going to be as popular. As long as fossil fuel is a thing, it's not going to be as popular.
It's interesting because, we've had this conversation a lot with a lot of people. Because, like you said, we are sort of early adopters to it, which is interesting because electric motors have been out a lot longer than diesels have, but battery technology is what's catching up. And I think the first line on our website is like, it's not for everyone. Because right now, the limitation is range, and some people have to get back to work on Monday. Mm-hmm. Some people have to, you know, get back to drop their kids off at school or whatever. And some people go to the high Arctic and have to motor for thousands of miles because there's just no wind. And if you're there longer, you get frozen. You know, like, there's reasons why you have to motor. And battery technology is improving, and the percentages every year are going up for energy density. And they're getting close to breaking thresholds with energy density to gasoline and stuff like that. But I think the technology is already there, and it's going to take years before people's mentalities change towards it. Yeah. Just like with electric cars. It's already cheaper. It's already cheaper, or like if you're buying a new boat.
Yeah, I mean,
like the cost difference between putting in a top of the line electric system and a top of the line diesel system are plus or minus a couple thousand. Like when you're talking about $30,000 in motors, they're almost the same price. And so it's mostly just the mentality of actually relying on your sails and your ability to sail and being okay with taking a couple of days longer to go on a long passage or waiting offshore a couple hundred miles because it's, you know, the wind is changing or the forecasts are different. But satellite forecasting has also made it a lot easier to sort of plan and choose your routes more carefully and maybe go south a few hundred miles because there's better wind, or maybe go north a few hundred miles because there's, you know, you can avoid a storm and not just sort of go in a straight line and no matter what, you just keep pointing your boat in a straight line.
Yeah, I think a lot of times it's very much a preference.
Yeah.
Like a lot of, like we always tell people if they ask us like, oh, should we convert to electric? Like, if you have a working diesel,
keep it.
It's working. It's not going to be better for the environment for you to scrap it because it's going to end up in the scrapyard anyway. And so keep it. And then once it dies, try to figure out what your next route wants to, like what your next plan with the sailboat is. Do you rather just sail everywhere? Or do you want to go exactly like Dan said, like motor in the Arctic? In that case, maybe you should have a diesel. Or if you plan on just having in a marina and go racing every weekend and come back, then maybe an electric would be perfect for you.
I think we're already seeing it because we're sort of in tune with the industry. We're already seeing it start to take hold. Because of all of the benefits of electric, there's a lot of people already that are saying, well, you know, like I day sail or I race, like I'm fine with a 10 or 15 mile range. And there's some there's a decent amount of new yacht companies that are offering electric installs as an option. And there's some companies, I think we were talking with the guys at Spirit Yachts, which make these beautiful, you guys probably know Spirit Yachts. They make these beautiful like wood and they're fantastic. They were saying in 5 years, they're not going to be putting diesel motors in boats anymore. Because most of their boats are designed for that day sailing sort of luxury market. And what's more luxury than silently zipping along back into the marina? You know, it's just, and the fact that there's just no maintenance and they last the life of the boat and you already have a battery bank and you already have all the stuff that is required anyway. I think the benefits are there. And I think when the cost becomes less, you know, if it costs $30,000 to put in a new diesel and it's like 18 or something to go electric, people are going to start to take it more seriously.
Of course.
So as the cost comes down, it becomes more appealing.
Yeah, and viable financially.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, exactly.
And battery technology is increasing, and the energy density is increasing, and they're coming up with new technology every day. It seems like there's a new article about some carbon fiber nano infused something. So that's good as well.
So listen, thank you both for that. Like, thank you both so much. That is super interesting. Something that I personally have been, you know, wanting to know more about. I'm going to throw one additional bonus question at you, which is actually something that you touched on at the very, very beginning of this interview, which is to do with how, I think one of you, I think Dan, you said that you consider sailing to be more environmentally friendly or greener, and that boats are greener than cars or living on land. Now, we occasionally, and I'm sure it may be the same for your YouTube channel, occasionally get people that are like, oh, it's just so, you know, it's a lot of plastic you're polluting the oceans with, all your boats are. And so it's, to me, is a huge point of interest as to how polluting a carbon fiber boat is and how green it actually is. So, I mean, what are your thoughts on it? I mean, assuming that you're building a new boat, I know this is going to just set off all the lunatics on the internet. They're going to be like, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. But to us, I agree with you. I do agree with you that your carbon emissions, and if you're trying to live a fairly green, and again, that's going to set off the loons as well, existence, you are going to have a smaller carbon footprint. But in the actual construction of all this fiberglass, there's also a lot of plastic resin that has to be scrapped, and there's no way of recycling carbon fiber. Fiberglass.
Well, I think when it comes to being green, so to speak, it's not really about what you're using in a sense. It's more about being conscious about what you're using.
Yeah.
Right. If you have a boat, maybe it's more plastic than if you live in a concrete house, but at least you're conscious about the fact that you're reusing it in a way that you're going to use it till it dies anyway.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's about being like mentally conscious about your decision.
We'll take it even more. We'll let the internet explode even more. We have no issues with plastic at all. Plastic is a fantastic material. It's super strong. It's easy to work with. It lasts forever. Like, if you use it in the right application, you know, like, every material has its own benefits and properties, and plastic is a material.
Mm-hmm.
We got the internet exploded when Kika installed her like botanical garden in our boat, and maybe 70% of the plants were real, and there was like a couple of plastic plants in the back just to kind of like cover the chain plate because it wasn't going to get any sun. And we were like, I can't believe you're putting plastic on your boat and blah, blah. And we're like, our ropes are plastic. Our sails are plastic. Our boat is plastic. Our windows are plastic. Like, everything on our boat is plastic already. Like, chill. but it's also 50 years old, and it's going to be around for another 20 or 30 years. Like, and that's why plastic's so great.
Yeah.
If it's not a disposable thing, mm-hmm. you know, like, yeah, don't use plastic straws and don't buy a bunch of plastic stuff and just throw it away if you can. But, it's, We've been dealing with greenwashing and carbon emissions and all that for, 10 years now, because we went through architecture school, and it's a big topic as well. I think it's like 40% or something of the carbon emitted by a building is emitted before the building even starts going up. It's some big number like that. And I imagine it's the same as a boat. But, you know, everything's a spectrum. Yeah. And the fact that we live on like a light bulb worth of electricity and, yeah, you know, don't burn hardly any fossil fuels. It's better than not, but at the same time, we're also not planning to build a brand new boat anytime soon, because the one we have is fine. You know, it's that whole, like, keeping up with the Joneses sort of thing, where it's like, if you have a reason to build a larger boat, or expanding your family, or, like, your boat sunk or broke, whatever, like, that's one thing, but, I don't know. It's not like we're cycling through a boat every year just because we want something better or bigger or faster, you know, something else like that.
That's just what we're doing.
Yeah, exactly, right? but you guys kind of get it, right?
Don't know who they're talking about there.
but that's the thing. That's why we always say that, like, if you have a working diesel, keep it. Like, there's no reason ripping out a perfectly fine engine to go green, to go with an electric just because you like, want to go green or you want to be electric. It's like, well, yeah, but unless you really don't like the sound or the maintenance or something, you have a better reason to. But, you know, don't do it because you think it's better for the environment. But at the same time, it's almost impossible to actually put a real number on, like, how bad, quote-unquote, anything is for the environment, because the chain of production and the life cycle of a product is so huge, and it's so networked and integrated. Like, people give us that, like, oh, do you know how much mountains are destroyed to mine lithium and blah, blah, blah? We're like, yeah, we get it, man. Like, but, you know, what are we supposed to do about it? Lithium's recyclable, so they can at least use it in another
battery.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
it's just, we get it. And you can only do the best you can.
Yep, absolutely.
I think actually that is probably the best, most concise answer I've ever heard about the use of plastics. I think it's perfectly okay to use plastics. And that's not a bad word, as long as they're not just going to be trashed, you know, where you can recycle or they are not disposable items.
Yeah.
There is nothing wrong with it.
You've seen the...
Because you're right, it's a material.
You've seen the dumpsters behind the malls the day the new iPhone comes out, where they just throw away thousands of iPhone cases that are all mass produced for 20 cents in China somewhere. Like, that kind of plastic, it's bad. But fiberglass, like, you can just keep patching it together and keep going. And as long as the boat doesn't sink or, like, end up in a hurricane, like, fiberglass boats... don't really have a shelf life.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Actually, I agree. I mean, and we hope that our boat will be around, you know, whoever owns it next.
Exactly.
Yeah,
right.
You know, but yeah, so as long as you're not just using it for disposable reasons, then, you know, that's pretty astute. So thank you both. Listen, that I think just rounds everything up. Dan, Kika, it's been an absolute joy to see you both again. I'm sorry that we didn't get to spend more time with you in Southampton now that you're in Amsterdam.
We'll be back.
we're in Saturday.
Everything is so close together.
Slight knock on the hull 2 hours later. But listen, lovely to see you both again. And we genuinely look forward to seeing your adventures as you carry on with
awesome.
The next season. So for those of you who haven't seen them, Dan and Kika from Sailing Uma, a huge sailing channel and people that we have followed for a long while. All the links to their social media, their YouTube channel, are in the description. And we will catch up with you soon with another video cast. So thanks very much for watching this one. Goodbye.
Bye.